And now that you're here, we're all in the company of your cool aunts. I'm Sam.
And I'm Ted.
And this is the Your Cool Aunts podcast, where we follow the lives and times of cool aunts through Claire's diary. So welcome back. And if you're new here, hop on over to the website, check it out. You'll find lots of stuff there. All of Claire's diary entries, her photographs, everything. Lots of good stuff. But first, we have a diary, a note, and lots of good things.
Hi, how are you?
I'm okay.
Great.
This is a substantial diary entry. I can tell there's several pages to it, so I'm a little excited.
Maybe she's into something.
I resist the temptation to pre-read, so just for the record, this is virgin reading.
We hear it when you hear it, right?
Yes.
You read it when you read it.
Yes, that's true. This is called From the Porch.
Good place to be from.
Claire's note. When we last spoke, I shared some thoughts about special moments. The entry was called First Impressions. It was about the times when you know that you'll want to remember every detail such that you'll be able to recall or return to it in the future. This was how I wanted to present my decision to start my own importing business. It meant that much to me because I felt this was going to be a significant event in my own timeline. So I wanted to remember it. Mind you, I had no difficulty making the decision, and deep down, I knew for sure that I would encounter nothing less than unqualified support from people close to me. However, what I did not expect were the reactions I encountered out in the business world of wine and spirits among the people I met as a buyer. They said things like, "What took you so long?" and "Finally." These were among the most common, and another one was, "Now we can finally talk," which was affirming, great to hear, and happily promising, from a business perspective, that is. Although in hindsight, I wish I was better prepared to react, as in ready to mark that particular moment and lock it into memory. It wasn't all that long ago, and yet sometimes I have to ask Brigitte, "How did so-and-so react to our announcement anyway? I can't remember." What's my lesson in this? It's about the value of sharing these moments, not just the moment, but sharing it, of having someone else to enjoy, prompt, and even recall detail that you may have missed. And then in those back and forth conversations accented with commentary, you both laugh and feel as though that memorable moment happened in just the last hour or so. You really can travel back in time and place with memories built upon moments like these. I think you might know exactly what I'm trying to describe here. And this is but one of the many reasons why I share this diary entry with you. Every entry is like one of those special moments I describe. They're unique, worth recalling, and well worth sharing. And I hope that the sharing prompts and reminds us to engage with and maybe even inspire the people we know, as well as those we only briefly encounter. And most of all, to recognize those who inspire with their confidence, their experience, and of course, their independent spirits. Not necessarily your mother's sister, but their cool aunts. Your cool aunts. We'll talk again soon, Claire.
She always gives us these little tidbits before
Claire
she gets
is
going.
Claire is waxing very philosophical these days. You know, these special moments and locking them into memory and recalling them. And now she's sort of going down this little sidetrack of sharing those memorable moments so together you can recall them.
I think
a little insurance policy, right?
I think what's interesting is how often do you reread a diary and then annotate it, which is what she does in her letter. You know what I mean? So she's giving us the past, but she's reflecting it through her note, what that past is, or her reflections about the past. So you're getting the past and you're getting the present at the same time, which is pretty interesting when you think about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, philosophical Claire.
Claire's always philosophical.
Are we ready to jump in?
Sure.
This entry is called From the Porch. So
the Grinnell's porch? No.
I do not know what porch yet. And Claire begins. You ready?
Yes.
Okay. Everybody's ready. We've already celebrated our first year importing wine and spirits, and I'm thrilled by the growth of our little startup. I knew from my first inkling of an idea that my business's success would depend upon acceptance by the makers. I knew the style and type of wine or spirit I wanted to export definitely existed. I've met these makers but whether any of these artisans would want to share more widely or at all was the unanswered question. It wasn't easy, and it wasn't initially fast until Alexander became involved. And that is when things changed.
Who's Alexander?
Alexander was the guy she sat next to on the plane.
That's right, that's right.
On the flight from Paris to San Francisco.
The wine guy.
Yeah, she was upgraded to first class. It was Laurent, you know.
There are no coincidences, remember that?
I thought maybe it was a new Alexander. You never know.
Shall I go on?
Yes, please.
Okay. Alexander. Yes, that French guy. She says it right here. That French guy. The one I was seated next to on that fateful flight back to California in my homeward bound diary entry. The one with whom I exchanged contact information. Yes, that Alexander. Returning to California for some rest, I was going to announce my new business plan to my mother, aka Barrett, Laurent, and maybe anyone else who happened to be hanging around the beekeeper's porch. Wait, what? This is Claire saying, wait, what?
I like how she addressed herself, and this is a diary entry. Wait, what?
She continues. She says, normally I'd say that's far too many coincidences to be believable, but there it is. This is how it happened. It is a great story, even though it's a true one. It has to be because it breaks every rule in fiction writing. More than one hero, a semi-villain, a few odd characters, sweet justice for an underdog, no tragedy, some laughter, the possibility of love, and blue skies every day. I wondered if this is what dreams are made of, or maybe romance novels? Ah, well, this is my life such as it is, and I'll keep it as it is.
Intrigue.
I think Claire writes her diary as though she's writing a novel sometimes, you know? When you think about it, she kind of tees up a story and...
Well, I think I think her diary entries seem to be very complete in terms of what she's thinking about, because I think all too often people just write. She does give us great insight.
Yes, she does. She's good at this. Okay. And Claire continues. It was all the right stuff, as they say. The comfort of the familiar, the warmth of home, favorite foods, and nearly limitless conversation with my mother. I don't think we'd spent this much time together since I was in high school. It was the perfect recipe for calm. We even made some bread, another activity from long ago. And we ended up making 3 loaves because, as my mother well knew, and she quotes her mother here, and she says, as soon as someone gets a whiff of this baking, we'll be inundated with hungry porch visitors. And they arrived on cue and with expectant faces as the loaves emerged from the oven. Natalie brought a full crock of fresh butter and a few bottles of her own red burgundy. Tim offered up a chunk of cheese, probably left over from lunch. Earlier, Laurent had gathered an armful of wildflowers and created an exceptional arrangement in an old milking bucket. It was so casual, yet purposeful. So French. Time out. I have a comment. One of my favorite things to do in France. There are so many forests. There's a forest on every corner. You'll always see these little, like, petite arrangements, you know, a 5 or 6 euro kind of thing. A little casual.
Something.
And then it's bundled maybe with some raffia. Or for the broken long stem roses, that they have these, like, little mini, like, galvanized buckets. And it's just one rose with little tiny stem of something. It's the sweetest thing in the world. Oh, I love that.
Do you remember the rose store in Montmartre?
Yeah, right on the corner.
It was just roses, and outside they would throw petals.
There were always a few petals on the sidewalk.
That was very cool.
Yeah.
They know how to do flowers, that's for sure.
Well, the other part of that is the experience of buying a bouquet of flowers. You don't go and pull out a few stems like you might in the supermarket in the States. No, no. Somebody is going to craft a bouquet for you, and they'll be very put off if you try to give too much direction other than I'd like some of this and some of that. And without fail, they will build you a really beautiful bouquet and then wrap it in a big conical paper and another ribbon and, you know.
I can see it just listening to you. I can see them, those beautiful flowers.
Yeah.
And there's always some oddity, like, what was it? What is it we saw one time? Was it asparagus? I think it was.
Oh, the asparagus blossom. No, it wasn't.
Artichoke.
It was an artichoke blossom.
Artichoke blossoms. Oh, my God. I never knew an artichoke could be so beautiful.
It's big, purple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's the paying attention to how you build something beautiful as opposed to just simply saying, here are a dozen roses. You know, it's
adding
special.
Well, it's not some of this and some of that. It's, you know, they'll take a pinch of, I don't know, even baby's breath or a fern accent, and then they'll put it all around the flower. And then they take another flower and it's layered. It's more of a layered assembly.
Floral, you know, architecture.
I guess, yeah.
Floral, yeah, it's really fine. Beautiful.
Well, that's a
memory. That's a beautiful memory.
That's a memory that I shared.
I remember a memory of you getting flowers in Luxembourg Gardens on your birthday. Remember that?
Of course.
Yeah, that was a pretty special gift.
It was a delightful gesture by a friend.
Yes.
Thank you again if you're listening.
You know who you are.
So back to it. Well, Laurent had made this very French bouquet of wildflowers, and Claire continues, it was so casual, yet purposeful, so French, the bouquet. I'm not sure what the best part of this impromptu late lunch was until, that is, Barrett brought out a plate of slab-cut heirloom tomatoes, seasoned only with a bit of flake salt and cracked pepper, and drizzled with a bit of bright green olive oil. Okay, so we have fresh-baked warm bread, butter and a crock from Natalie, cheese from Tim, wine from Natalie, flowers from Laurent. We're on the beekeeper's porch.
Life is good.
And tomato, chunks of tomato. Oh, man. Aww.
Goes to show you something simple can be so good.
Okay. Well, the scene is set. Come with me to the beekeeper's cottage is the next section title. And Claire says, imagine this scene with as many of your senses as you can muster. The porch of the beekeeper's cottage. It reminds me of the terrace and the stone table at the Grenot Vineyard. You remember we called the table Henge, as in Stonehenge, because of its immense size and weight. These two places are so different. I guess purpose is the similarity. So many conversations and meals, cups of coffee and glasses of wine had crossed over that table, protected from the sun by a densely vine-covered pergola overhead. It also provided a sense of intimacy from the world. But here on the beekeeper's porch, where there are literally no visual similarities to the Grenot's terrace, yet it feels so familiar to me. The porch is pristinely clean, and somehow it always feels freshly painted and glossy, like the bright white clapboards on the cottage. Only one step up from the ground level makes the porch that much more inviting. You can easily step up onto it from any of its three sides. Almost a given, the ceiling is robin's egg blue beadboard, and the floor is a very dark gray. Two corner posts support the roof, and a few hanging planters, always lush with flowering annual plants. Daylilies grow all along the foundation and never seem to be out of season. The yard and garden surrounding the porch looks like a New England postcard, which I think might be intentional, especially the low fieldstone wall in front that serves as more of an accent than any kind of protective barrier. At the entry point in the center of the wall is a small gate that's made of twisted vine stock. It's always open. I'm not sure if it was ever even meant to close, but there it is. Can I pause?
I was going to ask you to. I can see the picture. I can just see it. The more she describes it, the more.
Well, she's giving us layers and layers, the physical description of the porch. The blue ceiling, that's a traditional New England thing. I don't know if it's as common in other parts of the country.
I don't either. But it is always blue and gray.
Yeah.
Gray floors.
I think what I liked, and it's a little bit unusual, that the porch is only one step up, so it's not high up off the ground. It's very sort of makes it more casual, you know?
Yeah. But what really, really brought me back was the fieldstone fences. That is really New England.
Yeah. Usually in New England, there's always daylilies growing against them in the summer, right?
Yeah.
You always see the tops of the daylilies from the other side just peeking over the wall. I like the gate made out of twisted vine stock. It's probably just propped up.
I have a picture of that.
It's probably just propped up against the stone, right? It doesn't really do anything. Well, Claire says, Barrett manages to coax the palest of pink peonies to grow in the warming sun against the redwood fence off to the side yard.
And back on the porch, there's a wood table with two long benches and with an armchair at either end. There are a few other assorted chairs, footrests, and a few small side tables that together form a few conversation clusters. Everything is old, but in great condition, worn smooth with time and use. It's a classic look. That reminds me of something else, too. White oak is a very common thing throughout France. They use it for making barrels and so forth. And I always notice this in the older houses. The floors are unfinished, but they're super smooth and they're shiny with wax.
I love
the smell of it. I love the creakiness of it.
Well, don't forget, she's just redone this cottage that she's moved into, right?
Well, so you know, it's very authentic.
It's authentic looking, right. Yeah. So I was thinking, old, but it's not really old. It's got some old elements to it.
It's old, but improved.
It's improved, yes. That's a good way of putting it.
Everything is old, but in great condition, worn smooth with time and use. It's a classic look. Oh, and my favorite place to perch, Claire says, to perch, read, or to nap, is the cushioned love seat hanging from the ceiling on thick rope. Once I'm settled in there with a book, it swings ever so slightly in time with my breathing.
I want one. And let's also talk about those peonies that her mother has figured out how to coax out of the ground.
Oh, yeah. Let me just give you one more line. She says, are you with me now? I really do try to capture the details of a more complete picture in my diary entries, so I can share and maybe return. So, yeah, Claire.
Yes, she absolutely
it's working.
Did that. Yeah, it's working for right. sure.
Yeah, the pink peonies. There's a peony that could be mistaken for white. It's such a pale pink. And then as it opens more and more, and you see a couple of the little pink veins on the inner petals.
Oh, yes, I know the ones you're talking about. Oh, yeah, they're stunning. I remember driving past a peony. What do you call them? Patch that went along a fieldstone fence in Newport.
Yeah.
Almost, I don't know, I don't know how many feet, but it was incredible. And they'd pop up, and then it was just a beautiful. They had all different colors, white and pink.
Yeah, I think that was the floral folly of the owner from, if you recall, the house where that property was. It was all glass patio doors, like
right.
French doors on the side that face that. I can see somebody waving her hand saying, I'd like to see peonies. Okay, so Claire's swinging in the breeze.
I want one of those
porch swings. So this is where we were enjoying the late lunch feast of just baked bread, butter, cheese, sliced tomato, and good wine. Add to this the company of Barrett, Laurent, Natalie, and Tim. It did feel perfect in that moment. And again, now, as I recall it all, here in my diary. We'd probably been on the porch for a few hours, having discussed all of the pros and cons of my business plans, the finer points of bread baking, tomato growing, and the all-natural butter from up the road. My mother's honey pot was the constant centerpiece on this table. Natalie claimed she traded 2 bottles of wine for the 2-pound block of butter. What a deal. The olive oil is from someone here in town as well, so we were all very local with our aperitif. That is, it was all local until a stranger was dropped off at the vineyard's entrance, at the end of a very long driveway. Our raucous conversation quieted, and our attention shifted as we watched him approach on foot, closer and closer. No one moved. And he called out for Natalie. But I was the only one to recognize him. It was my seatmate from the flight here, Alexandre, bag in hand and backpack slung over the other shoulder. When I stood to greet him, he immediately recognized me too, but we were both very confused like everyone else. Stuttering through an uncomfortable hello, he repeated, "Is Natalie here?" Whereupon she stood up and said, "Oh, wait. Are you Alexandre from the Vintners Forum?" Yes, yes, and so forth. And then when everything was finally sorted out, he explained he had just finished up with an appointment nearby and thought he'd stop by to say hello to Natalie. Apparently, they'd met on an online Vintners Forum, and Natalie extended an open invitation to visit her vineyard anytime. So I guess he did. And there we stood, gathered together on the porch.
That must have been funny.
Awkward.
Looking for Natalie, but recognizable by Claire. Oh, God.
This is funny.
Shall I continue?
Yeah, what's he selling?
Okay. Well, it's interesting because he's got his luggage with him. Like, where's okay, buddy, where you going?
What you selling? Where you going? Where'd this bed come from?
It's always awkward, though, when you're traveling and you have to take your luggage with you, like, to an appointment or something. It's like, well, I'll just leave that over here. The next section is entitled A Stranger No More. A glass was set out for him with another small plate, and we all made room for him. I broke the remaining awkwardness by sharing the story of our meeting on the flight from Paris to San Francisco. Leave it to Claire. She's going to sort everything out here. It's like, okay, I'm going to straighten this out.
How do we know you?
I think, Claire continues, she says, I think he was a little embarrassed that he had not yet reached out to me. But then again, neither had I. Laurent caught my eye at one point, indicating no with a subtle head movement. So I did not continue with the story details about the seat upgrades that she had arranged for me. I took her lead and shifted the conversation. Turning to Alexandra, I just encouraged him to eat something and enjoy another glass of Natalie's impressive wine. And then finally, Natalie covered the waning conversation by joining in with a few introductory questions about his vineyard and offering to give him a tour of her pride and joy. Once they were out of earshot, Barrett asked, and she's giving us a quote here, is there anything I should know before inviting him to spend the night in the barn? It's been cleaned up and made ready for guests. Oh, says Claire, let's let Natalie make that invitation.
Whose barn is it anyway, right?
This was all about all I could push out of my throat at that point. She continues, she says, Laurent had gone back to the kitchen, leaving me sitting with Tim, who asked simply, who is this guy? I thought I was being extremely funny and maybe a bit coy by saying, beats me, ask Natalie, maybe she knows.
Poor Alexander, if you only know they knew what they were saying about him.
Somehow, Tim appreciated my weird sense of humor with another glass of wine. I admire his big brother posture in all things concerning Natalie.
You ever notice Tim's always resolving things with another glass of wine?
Who knows?
Is that it?
Tim's a good guy. No, no, no. Oh. There's a bit more. So Claire continues and says, Alexander happily accepted Natalie's hospitality, and he spent the night in the barn and slept till noon. So there are several people moving about the vineyard at this point, right?
Yeah.
Apparently, Laurent and Claire are staying with Barrett. Tim is ever present. Natalie lives and works and owns the whole show. This is our cast of characters,
cast of
right?
Characters.
And the sky is always blue.
And there's always wine on the table.
Yeah. Still exhausted, Alexander managed to find his way back to the porch, probably in search of coffee and something to eat. Everyone but Tim was out and about, and so he stepped up to the task, as he always manages to do, and he made coffee and breakfast in my mother's kitchen, and joined Alexander at the porch table once again. Soon after, I returned from walking with my mother's dog, Cha, and joined them at the table for another coffee. I think it's an understatement to say that Tim was probably intent on finding out if Alexander had a, she puts in air quotes, special kind of interest in Natalie.
A little possessive there, isn't he?
Protective.
Oh, protective. Okay.
I don't want to tell you what the next line says.
Come on.
To be continued.
No. That's it? She leaves
Claire,
us hanging like that? Oh, my God.
You are a D-A-W-G. You're a dog. Well, before, I have a few things to say. I like Tim. I like Tim a lot. Tim is very cool. He's always, it's like Tim can do everything. You know, he knows how things work.
A renaissance man.
Yeah, I think he's just a really good guy, you know? And he helped, if I recall, he did the remodel on the beekeeper's cottage with Barrett, right?
Yes, I think that's what happened.
So, you know, he's one of these people that's into the details of the way it used to be done. And I don't know if he's crazy enough to be, you know, limited to only hand tools. I don't think he's that nutty, but I'm guessing it wouldn't surprise me. And he probably always works alone, too.
But he's got more than one job, though. It seems like he's a caretaker, builder. He does a lot
carpenter,
of things.
Carpenter.
Yeah. Jack of all trades.
You know, he probably runs the harvest, you know, and then the equipment. And like I said, I think he's one of those people that knows how everything works. He's a good guy.
So Natalie should be thankful that she's got somebody like that around her, you know, and now she's got...
Well, Natalie and Barrett, I think it's not a family. It's in a way almost better than a family because everybody's choosing to be there, not out of obligation, but choice, right? Which is ideal. So
this seems like it was a real good match for Barrett to have found Natalie and for Natalie to have the kind of expertise that Barrett and Laurent and now Claire brings to her.
You know something? I think there are certain kinds of people who attract certain kinds of people. And I think Natalie is a decent person, and it's no surprise that somebody like Tim would find her or that Barrett would find Natalie. You know, there's no surprise to me that these people kind of gravitate.
Found each other. Yeah, gravitated.
Oh,
so we still don't know about Alexandre. Well, you know, this guy's kind of like, he's that he would just take on this invitation. Oh, come on by anytime you're in the neighborhood. And he shows up, you know, with his backpack and his, and he's willing to sleep. I'm sure the barn is a very nice barn. It's been, you know, it's tended well and all that. But his willingness to sleep in the barn and then connect to them again in the morning.
I think that is a kind of an older school, a little bit more European way of accepting invitations, that they're taken seriously, they're not empty. And, well, you did invite me, and here
right.
I am.
Right. I'm in the neighborhood.
I'm here,
right.
You know.
But the funny, the look on their faces when he calls out Natalie, but Claire recognizes him. That must have been that's a very funny scene. You know, like, who is this guy kind of thing?
Yeah. She's, yeah, everybody's a little confused.
Everybody. It's true. That's the best way to put this one.
It sorts itself out. And I think that's what part two is going to
do. She certainly left us with questions, didn't she?
Hold on. I'm just remembering one other thing. Part two would be the last of this season.
Oh,
right?
Goodness, yeah.
Okay, so, well, that's interesting. Okie doke.
Well, we've had a couple of interesting departures from the norm with the Love, War, Champagne series. And now with this one, I guess it doesn't have a name, but it has parts.
I'm glad that Claire is not bound by any rules or, you know, she's just kind of letting it happen, you know?
Yeah.
I guess there was a lot to say in this one, but anyway, this diary entry has come to an end.
Oh.
Don't forget, you can go back, you can listen to any of the prior episodes. They're all on the website. They're all on any platform where you listen. Of course, you can find the diary entry themselves with the photography on the website. So,
which are beautiful, beautiful, clear photography.
I'm Sam.
And I'm Ted.
And we'll see you next time when we are
back at the mic.